Matthew Boss. Sir, you may begin.
Great, thanks, and good afternoon. It's Matt Boss, J.P. Morgan's Department Stores and Specialty Softlines Analyst. For our final fireside of the conference, we have Nordstrom's CEO, Erik Nordstrom, and CFO, Anne Bramman. Erik, I figured I'd pass it over to you and Anne for any opening remarks, and then we can jump right into questions.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. And thanks, everybody, for participating. We appreciate it under these extremely strange, unusual conditions. I thought we'd just start off, with the obvious, given this context and unprecedented times, how we're viewing things. And a couple points I'd like to make up front. Number one, while these are most unprecedented times and changing quickly, and none of us have been through this, the changes we think and we do believe these are going to drive changes with our customer and our industry, but we think these changes are really directionally consistent with what we've been seeing for quite some time and have been investing against. So the move towards digital, the role that physical retail plays, I think we can get into some examples of how we see that, but really the customer changing how they want to shop and being in control and the blending of physical and retail that way. Secondly, we've taken a lot of actions, I think fairly quickly, with a view of keeping our company healthy for the longer term. We don't think this is a 30-day event, a 60-day event. From everything we know, it's going to take a while for retail, especially our part of retail, to rebound. So we took a lot of actions to enhance our financial flexibility and really look at all stakeholders to do that, including shareholders, with the removal of our dividend, pay cuts with our leadership team, with our board, furloughing employees, terms with vendors, everything we can to put us in the best position long term, and we feel really good about our liquidity there. And then lastly, I just want to get across that while this is a crisis and a time of great change, we also see some opportunity here. We see opportunity to take on these short-term challenges, but with an eye towards what type of company and what our industry is going to be like when we come out of this. We think that's generally consistent with the direction we've been heading in the last year, but crises do often provide opportunity to drive change more quickly. And that's what we're really focusing on is as we come out of the immediate short-term decisions of the crisis to look more deeply at the capabilities we want, how we want to show up to customers, and the competitive advantages we can have.
And Erik, I just want to add that you've seen us take a number of actions, and Erik addressed some of those. It is about having the most financial flexibility. You saw that we exited 2019 with roughly $850 million of cash on our balance sheet. We also have a revolver of $800 million that we drew down. And as Erik talked about, we suspended the dividend. We have stopped share buyback, and we've targeted more than $500 million of operating expenses, capital expenditures, and working capital to improve cash, terminal cash flow by at least $500 million for this year. We're also very quickly realigning our inventory with sales trends. We've done a lot of, as Erik talked about, we furloughed some of our employees. I would also add that not only did our board, they're not getting a cash payment, the executive team is taking pay cuts, and then Pete and Erik have also declined their salary for September. So we take this very seriously. We have a responsibility to our people, to our customers, and to all our stakeholders, and it's really about taking these steps that not only ensure the short term, but also the long term health of the company and coming out the other side and positioning as well.
Great. So one of the themes at the conference the last couple of days has been companies with the ability to emerge from this crisis, potentially even in a stronger market share position, to your point, Eric. Some companies have talked about deepening the connections with the consumer throughout the outbreak or foundational investments that they had made into this. I guess, how do you think that Nordstrom is positioned? What do you see as the opportunity for Nordstrom potentially emerge from this crisis as a stronger and even more efficient company?
A couple things on that. One, I would start with our business model. We have stores and online, but more digital capabilities than most in our categories. It's about a third of our sales being from e-commerce. That's also the interplay of our full-price and off-price business. We have a very strong off-price business, both in stores and online. The online portion of our off-price business, NordstromRack.com and Hope Book, is unusually large. Online off-price is a tough model on its own, but it's part of our ecosystem. It plays a very important part, and it's a big business. There's a synergy amongst all those businesses for us. Off-price does not operate in a silo for us. And you may have heard us talk about this before. Our Rack stores are our biggest and most efficient new customer acquisition point that we have. And a third of those new customers each year become full-price customers, too. And in general, any engagement we could get with customers, any additional engagement, makes that customer a better customer. So for those customers that, as an example, that come to us through off-price, not only do they start being introduced to full-price, but they spend more with Nordstrom, Inc., because of their full-price spend. They spend more in off-price, too. And that goes from online to stores or from stores to online as well. So there's a synergy to that with customer acquisition, with customer migration. There is a synergy certainly with our inventory and with vendors. We've become a more important retail partner with vendors. We're able to clear out excess inventory, full-price channel through our off-price channel, which for the next, 6 months or so is going to be really important for us. There's also a synergy just in the business model. And one of the nice parts, given right now, it gives us a lot of flexibility. We can pivot and emphasize different parts of our business. It seems obvious to say that certainly we're at right now that we're only a digital business right now, with our stores being closed. But that shift to online, are going to be accelerated through this, and having both full price and off price material businesses there give us a lot of opportunity. The other part I touch on would be around engagement. Part of what goes with customers' journeys being both digital and physical, engagement higher. Really, every case that. Full price, it can be across and stores, but it's also across services. Which I like as an example, because it, by definition, it's a physical service. It's not something that can be done online. It's a world craft beauty. The largest employer, tailors in North America, that we've developed, and we know it's a customer engagement point that when we do it, it results in a lot of great customer metrics improving, trips, spend, et cetera. So we have a good reputation for service and services. These capabilities are by having a strong physical footprint, our footprint with full prices in all 8 malls, and off price with off mall locations, have plans to leverage these rack locations more for some full price services, which we can get about our market strategy. Having business as that we have capability of digital and physical, and looking at the physical ones by market, that we can bring to serve them better, to bring them the curated selection that they want, and the speed and convenience that they want, but also introducing them to newness. Our business, Matt, you touched on the extreme differences in retail these days, that if you're selling necessities and it's a top place to be. That's not us. We're not in the commodity. We're in the newness business, and most of our customers, they don't shop shopping list typically as they want, but they're interested in something new. So in being able to introduce them to new brands, new products, is something that's really important to our business, and we think really the price of admission more and more is having really top-notch capabilities both in stores and online.
So maybe to touch on and to stick with the e-commerce. So your e-commerce is best in class. I think it makes up over a third of your sales today. How are you able to evolve your marketing spend and shift consumer traffic online? Can you just remind us of Nordstrom's profitability profile online relative to brick and mortar stores?
Sure, Eric, you want to take the first part, and I'll wrap it up.
Sure. Our marketing serves channels. Automatically does. Marketing that we generate with the purpose of driving online demand gives a great benefit to stores. So massive wise part into is what's resonating to people right now and types of product, but also services. Before they hit, our pickup and store was, really impressive, the growth, 100% growth, the extent. Those capabilities, which, a number of retailers have, and they can, in other categories, be it Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Best Buy, there's some really good examples of people who are using their set to bring products to customers as customers want. Shopping journey online and picking up in store is something that really resonates with customers. I think will be important when as we come out of this. So we are looking to as it comes out to emphasize more of services we have. The only over the years, and not just through the crisis, is our unique merchandise mix. We have product is not necessarily exclusive, but the limited a product that's not found everywhere, and we're not the everything store, and is not is about to know a lot of that discovery and it comes from some scarcity. So to be the retail partner of choice for the best brands in the world and getting and some limited distribution has importance, and we think that's going to continue.
And your question, Matt, on the economics. So, you know, just and Eric's touched upon this, but, you know, the beauty of our business model is we actually do quite a bit of store fulfill for online orders. And so that actually helps us in some of the breadth, less depth pieces to our inventory management is actually a part of how we're fulfilling some of our e-commerce orders today, having access to inventory that's in the stores. The economics from a full price perspective is from a contribution margin, our digital business is at parity with the stores business. And the reason why is because, again, they share this inventory. So your margin structure is a merchandise margin perspective is the same. And then you've got variable costs between the stores. And to remind you, our store associates, our employees, are on a commission base, so it's a variable labor cost. And then on the e-commerce side, it's the supply chain cost. So those basically offset each other.
Great. So as we think about, I guess, two things to take a step back, and obviously thinking before store closure. So your full line doors, you had seen nice sequential improvement the last two quarters. Maybe Eric, can you talk to some of the drivers of the organic improvement, maybe where we stand today and where you see incremental drivers of improvement? And Eric, just a side note, at the end of your last answer, you were in a great spot. Before that, you were breaking up a little. So I don't know if there's a good spot where your reception's best, but you were breaking up a little, but we could still hear you.
Sorry about that. I
don't worry.
Okay. I'm in the basement of my house. So it's fun. I have good reception. All right. Well, stop me if I'll move around if it doesn't come through. We certainly exited the year with some momentum and really improved performance second half of the year versus the first half. Benefit came from improved loyalty, digital marketing, and merchandise balance. But a lot of our full price improvement has come from the traction we're getting from our market strategy. We're able to expand to five of our top markets in the fall. Things like buy online, pick up in store is much enhanced from our market strategy. Basically, we're able to bring a significantly higher selection to customers with faster delivery. And that's helped drive a lot of business. So when customers come in at a store, really for any reason, but for order pickup, they do tend to buy other things there. We also get returns back faster, which may not seem like a big deal, but returns are a big part of fashion business, especially when you're doing it online. And to have customers who, when they come in store to pick it up, most of those customers do try on the merchandise there. So if they're going to return it, we get it back faster, which helps our inventory turns and our profitability there. Can you hear me?
Great. So maybe just a follow-up to that as we kind of think about one of the big initiatives I know going forward is the local market strategy. And I myself have tested it out in New York. So can you maybe provide an update as we on the evolution of the local market strategy, maybe touch on performance to date? I think you've cited 2020 as the opportunity to scale the initiative. And just how we think about maybe even more near term, just the convenience dynamic as we come out of this, that you think this strategy might allow the customer.
I'm sorry, I broke up a little bit there. So you're asking about market strategy?
Yeah, the local market strategy, just how best to think about the, you know, maybe performance to date and just the evolution of it.
The performance has been very strong for us. And you know, we started in Los Angeles I guess it's been about 2 years ago now. And our goal, really a couple things. Number one, to engage customers more with services and across channels, making that really addressing some friction points along the way there. And secondly, has been to better leverage the inventory we have. Inventory is our biggest investment, and most of it sits in stores, and most of our stores are close to where most of our customers are. So while we've been on the same platform for a long time and to be able to leverage inventory across stores and online, there's opportunities to do that even more, which an easy way to think of that is the inventory selection that we're able to bring to customers for same day or next day delivery has gone up, depending on the store, 4 to 7x through our market strategy and having better connections between those. So we've had great results out of Los Angeles. We launched in New York in the fall with the our flagship opening there, and then expanded it to Chicago, Dallas, and San Francisco. With plans to add the 5 more markets in our top 10 as we get into this year. So results have been very strong, and those results ultimately are about market share, whether the sales online or in stores. We're looking at growing our market share, and what we've seen where we've had the longest test has been in Los Angeles, and we've seen good results there.
Great. And then maybe just to on the other side of on the other side of the store business, your off-price business, the last two quarters has also picked up. Maybe just touch on, and I don't know, maybe some of the answers are similar to the full price, but just what drove the slowdown over the last 12 months? Have you course corrected? And just how best to think about the off-price channel now going forward?
Yeah, well, off-price, you know, we had some challenges across all of our business at the beginning of last year, and particularly loyalty program. You know, instead of going all digital with our notes, we had some problems with that, and it set us back full price and off price. So, and associated with that was changing in the mix of our digital marketing, so we had to reset both those, and we did have some merchandise mix issues, both in full price and off price. They were a little different, but we had some issues there. So off price, you know, really addressed all three of those areas, and our team really executed very well last year. And at that, really about the halfway point of the year, was able to get much more traction on the top line, and the bottom line flow through was really very strong all year long there. So we had a good year in off price. And I think for off price, what's important, the main driver of that is that treasure hunt of finding great product at a great price. And our team really did a good job of that. And what's our space there, merchandise, wise is a little different. You know, we get compared to like the big off-price players of TJ Maxx or Ross or Burlington, and our merchandise mix is different there. It's our average price point is higher than those players, and our merchandise mix really the foundation of it is the same brands that we carry in full price. Bringing excess and opportunistic buys at a great price to customers of those sought after brands is really our sweet spot.
Great. Maybe to switch to margins. With the current store closures and obvious uncertainty in the economic backdrop exiting the crisis, and maybe near term, how are you planning to manage inventories, keep inventories current, again, given the sudden closure of stores and obviously the unprecedented events that are playing out?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in my opening comments, so the good news is we exited the year with a really strong discipline around having a spread between sales and inventory. So even exiting out of the year, and we talked about this in our press release, that, you know, the first in February, we were actually on plan until COVID-19 hit, I think everybody in March. And so, you know, the we clearly have a lot of, I would say, telemetry and operational big rigor on making sure that we're managing our inventory. Now, clearly, when you know, you've got 70% of your business shut down, your store business shut down, there is inventory in the stores. So, again, having that shared inventory between our e-commerce digital platform and the stores is allowing us to do fulfillment out of the stores as well as continuing to serve our customers through our Nordstrom.com and our NRHL.com, NordstromRackCoatLook.com sites. So that's helping us manage that inventory piece. As I would also say, you know, we, like everybody, are looking at our receipt plans and being very aggressive and making sure that we're managing through those during this time. And we've also, you know, talked about the goal of having by the end of the year the inventory in line with sales plans. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but you've seen that we're actually actively managing that, and actually we're out ahead of this a little bit. Some of the stimulus that we were running on our digital sites to drive demand for some of the inventory out there. So we're actively managing it. We're looking at it. We're managing from as Eric talked about, we've got more breadth than depth in our inventory, and we're a fashion retailer, and so. It's perishable, and so we are looking to maximize the amount of cash or return that we can get on the inventory that we own.
To that point, what is your flexibility as we think about, say, fall or holiday receipts? You know, how far out today are you bought? And then maybe to your point on the fashion side, what percentage of your mix, or just any way to think about, you know, more the perishable side. So, you know, maybe those goods that are or SKUs that are more fashion oriented, and maybe you have to take more of a near term markdown versus others where, you know, not as much a pack away, but maybe doesn't need to be sold in the first quarter and could still be sold in the second or third quarter. So maybe just any flexibility with receipts and just how to think about your mix of product.
Yeah. So, you know, we—I don't think we really have split out how much is fashion versus what we call replenishment or some of your basic pieces to it. What I will say is, we actively work with our vendor partners on this. I think we've got between Pete and our merchant team, very good relationships out there, and so we've been having a lot of healthy dialogues with our vendor partners and how to manage through this on both sides of this. And so, you know, I'll take our off-price business first. That is it's a shorter-term buy process, right? So it's very opportunistic. And again, coming into the year, this team really showed some exceptional operational discipline in having much more turn in the inventory and having more opportunities to chase. So coming out of where we are, coming out of COVID-19, you know, I think our off-price guys are kind of super excited because they see a lot of opportunities coming out in the second half of the year because clearly people are going to be clearing out of inventory at that point in time, and then it's going to be opportunistic for them. On the full price side, again, our off-price business is a way for us to also help manage the inventory. And, you know, we are actively looking at what's, as you mentioned, you know, more higher fashion, how much do we own, how much is on order. And as far as for fall and holiday, we're not in that season yet. So you're really looking at more your spring, summer receipts.
Great. And to take a step back on the gross margin overall, as we think about gross margin today versus, I think, in excess of 37% at peak levels, and as we take a look out and think back to your 2018 investor day, I guess how best would you outline a realistic target for gross margin longer term? And if we were thinking full price versus off price, do you see opportunity to expand gross margin at both channels or one more than the other? Just maybe how would you rank gross margin opportunities from here?
Yeah, you're in the moment today, so we're not giving a lot of forward guidance at this point. But what I can tell you about is what we saw in 19, especially exiting out of the year. And so even though I think most people would say that 2019 was a highly promotional environment, we were really pleased that our merchandise margins increased versus last year, and that exceeded our expectations. And again, it goes back to how we have been very disciplined on inventory, increasing turns, and then maintaining that positive sales and inventory spread throughout the year from 2019. We talk about our strategic partnerships, and Eric alluded to this earlier, we're not the everything store. And so having that curated assortment, having those relationships that's a relatively unique offering, actually helps you from a margin perspective, particularly in our full price business, because it's less of a commodity out there. And so that actually helps you maintain some of your margin rate. And I think the last piece to it is, you mentioned that our peak, there's a couple of things that are going in there. We did build over the last several years, we've built our off-price business, which has operating leases, which is in the occupancy cost. And then again, as we brought in New York, the depreciation from New York, and we will be opening up our West Coast Fulfillment Center. Those are in the occupancy costs that are impacting us for 2020 that we talked about in our last earnings call.
So on the expense front, maybe just to switch gears, how best to think about the variable costs within your SG&A and just any buckets or areas of flexibility, while stores are closed and with some of the difficult decisions that you're making? So just maybe flexibility on the SG&A and expense front.
Yes, I think, you've heard this story from us in for quite some time, and we've been continuing to focus on getting scale out of the digital investments we've been making for quite some time. And this environment, what we're seeing right now is really paying off for us between the digital marketing, the tech side of things, and our ability to do fulfillment both in stores and in our fulfillment centers. And so that's actually really, helping us get some scale and leverage out of that. From a variable cost perspective, it's everything, like we talked about, the store labor piece, especially in full price, is very variable because it is a commission rate structure. And then you can certainly flex some of the other pieces to it as well. I would say, in this environment, going into the year, we targeted an incremental to $250 million of expense savings coming through. That was on top of the $225 million that we did last year. That was primarily in our fixed overhead expenses that we've been reducing to get more scale and flow through. And then we also announced, in the last couple of weeks, that we're actually going after even more. The question we get a lot is your variable versus your fixed cost. I think you can see from some of the decisions, the very difficult decisions we've made, that everything is kind of variable at this stage. Nothing's off the table, and we're certainly looking at every possible way to make sure that we are flexing our cost environment to mirror what's going on around us.
Yeah, it's a great point. One of the key themes the past 2 days is, from a number of companies, has been every expense is now variable. And for some companies, that seems to even include rent. How are you approaching leases or any conversations you're having with landlords? And do you view occupancy as more near term, somewhat as a variable cost?
Yes, it just, we always remind people that in our full price stores, we pay very little rent as the anchor tenant, and we own about 70% of our full line stores. So the bulk of our operating leases are in our off price business, and so it's a different conversation than what maybe others are having.
That's a good point. On the operating expenses, in addition to the 200 to 250 that you had already announced. So on the additional bucket of $500 million, maybe are there any examples? And trying to think, are those costs that we should think of as permanent? Is that a Is that a permanent step down in the cost structure as we think about the ability to leverage sales going forward? Or is this something this year, that the actions that you're taking in light of some of the unprecedented changes in the backdrop?
Yeah, so clearly there's a mix, right? And so we have done some furloughing of some of our corporate employees, and we've reduced cash compensation for our board and our executives. So, some of that's going to be a short-term piece to this as everyone shares in our long-term liquidity. But I would say this is also a great opportunity to step back and think about how the business is evolving and how we would continue to support the business, what we need going forward as well. So I think, we'll be able to share more on our next earnings call. But at this stage, we're continuing to balance the long term, the short term, and the medium term.
And then just last question I had on margins, and it's really to circle back on, I think Eric talked about Nordstrom as a one-stop shop with the full line and the off-price and how the interplay between the two. As we think about the inventory management, and we think about some of the full price inventory with stores closed and your ability, to clear that inventory and maintain a clean position, how do you balance the use of the off-price channel and the Rack versus allowing it to be a true off-price model? Meaning, how do you make sure that the inventory coming from the full line doors, which I think historically is somewhat minimal, doesn't impede the ability of the Rack to act as a true off-price business?
Yeah, so the transfer, we call it a full line transfer, the transfer of product from our full price business to our off-price business, as you mentioned, it's pretty minimal. It's around 10 to maybe 15% of the inventory that's in the off-price business. It's actually part of the treasure, to be honest. When you go into a Rack store, you actually see it signage that talks about the fact that we just got this in from the full price business, and customers really respond to that. So, it is a great outlet for us. It's a great way to showcase for the customers that shop with us. But it isn't going to be 100% of that off-price business either. And so there is a lot of opportunities, as I mentioned in my earlier comments, for our off-price business to they do a lot of closeouts. They do a lot of excess inventory buys opportunistically out in the marketplace. So it gives them this is a big flexibility for them as we come out of this.
Great. And then just last couple questions were more around balance sheet and liquidity. So you have $800 million of cash on the balance sheet. You announced that you've drawn down $800 million on your revolver. I guess what's your overall confidence, maybe Eric or Ann, just overall confidence in Nordstrom's financial position today, and maybe just the mindset behind the revolver draw, any larger picture thoughts on the balance sheet and financial condition today?
Yeah, so why don't I start off, and then maybe Eric, you'd want to opine from your perspective. You've lived through a lot of ups and downs in this company, and it might be helpful for people to hear your perspective on this as well. So, Matt, I just want to correct. We had $850 million on the balance sheet at the end of the year, and then we did have the $800 million that we did pull down on the revolver. What I would walk you through is that we've done a lot of stress testing on our business with a lot of scenario planning, and our objective is to make sure that we've got ample and appropriate cash and liquidity to weather a lot of downside scenarios, as well as ensuring that we're well-positioned as we come out of this. So we're not taking this as a 30-60-90 plan. We're looking at this as a longer-term how to emerge as a stronger, better business. And so we've been taking a lot of precautionary measures to do that, and I've walked you through a number of those as well. But it is about making sure that we've got cash and liquidity, and that we're continuing to be have flexibility as we weather the storm.
Yeah, I would just add, of course, the company's been around a long time and been through the inevitable ups and downs, and the situation is unlike any other we've had. We've always had a very strong balance sheet, and we entered the year with a large cash balance, and the moves that Ann and her team have made have helped a lot. And really put us in a position as we look at the uncertainty, certainly of the rest of the year and getting into 2021, flexibility is really paramount. And flexibility from the liquidity we have, and part of it will lead to the flexibility in the marketplace. It's we want to give ourselves the ability to buy product much closer to need, both so we have the right quantities, but also there's going to be great products at great prices that are available to those who have the open to buy. We've made a lot of progress in the last couple of weeks to provide that capability. And again, I would just come back to what enhances that capability is that flexibility is having both full price and off price, where we can move product around and really do its best for our business.
That's great. And then just last question for me is, you noted in your release in terms of accessing the financial markets that you would look to potentially also raise capital if and when prudent. Could you just elaborate further on additional options and on your scenario analysis? Is there a point in time at which store closures, if they were prolonged, would require additional actions beyond what you've taken so far?
Yeah, so without going into details of our scenario planning, we've taken some pretty, I would say, draconian points of view on, you know, what happens in the U.S. economy, what happens in the retail space. And so that all informs our thinking. And one of the reasons why we put that comment in our release as far as, you know, making sure that we've got financial flexibility. So there's a number of options that are out there. And we just, you know, we wanted to signal that we are going to be opportunistic about it. But as we've been talking about on this call, the name of the game is the most cash liquidity and flexibility as we position ourselves for the mid to long term.
Great. That's great to hear. And I think that's also a very good place to wrap up. Eric and Anne, I wanted to thank you for your time and your transparency and wish you the best of luck. And please stay safe.
Thank you, Seth. Too. We appreciate everyone's interest in us.